You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
How would you react if you received a letter from the college your daughter planned to attend informing you that there was a 1 in 5 chance she'd be raped by a fellow student before she graduated? What if that letter went on to say that if she was raped, the university would ignore your daughter's complaints and let her assailant go unpunished? These are just a couple of the questions raised by The Hunting Ground, a powerful new documentary that Newsweek's Alexander Nazarian called a horror movie as frightening as any film I've seen since The Shining. Joining us now are Kirby Dick, who wrote and directed it, Amy Ziering, its producer, and Andrea Pino, a recent graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, who is featured in the film. It opens today at the Angelica Film Center on West Houston Street, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Kirby, Amy, and Andrea to our show today. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks.
Kirby, I understand you were saying something, Andrea? Kirby, I understand that when your film made its debut at the Sundance Film Festival in January, audience members gasped repeatedly while they watched it. Were they that surprised?
Yes, I think they were. I mean, we certainly were when we started the film. It's hard to imagine. You think of colleges and universities as a very safe place, and in many ways they are. But when it comes to sexual assault, they're not at all. You know, your numbers are in our film. We quote 16 to 20% of undergraduate women will be sexually assaulted while in college, and those numbers have been backed up year after year.
Amy, weren't you and Kirby and Andrea invited to host a screening of it at the White House on Wednesday evening?
Yes,
did
we
anybody
were.
Gasp there?
There were quite a few gasps there, and people were, you know, crying and moved and actually extremely grateful in the end that, you know, they'd seen it and that we'd made this film because they found it sort of revelatory and super important.
Hasn't the Obama administration made rape on campus one of its priority issues? It released guidelines last year as to how campus rapes should be treated. Was that, to some degree, because of the activities of people like you, Andrea? Are you there?
Yeah. I would say I'm definitely one of many students who are involved, and I think it's been so great to see kind of our just campus activism really spiral the national agenda.
As Manola Dargis points out in her review of the film in Today's Times, what makes this film so effective is that it puts a face, actually many faces, on the issues of sexual assault on college campuses. How willing, Amy, were these young women and several men to talk on camera about being raped?
Well, they were very willing first to tell me their stories off camera, obviously, because they were grateful that someone was reaching out and actually caring, because for the most part, pretty much everyone I had talked to, when they spoke with anyone, any administrators or anyone in any kind of official capacity about what had happened to them, they were met with, disbelief. Everything they said was completely questioned and challenged. And so they were very grateful to talk to me. And then, you know, they were, I'm very grateful to all of them who actually had the courage to come on camera. But no, it's never an easy thing to do, you know. And as you see in the film, many of them, when they do end up speaking out and going public, face incredible retaliation and pushback. It's kind of horrifying. No other crime does someone who's experienced it, get those kind of reprisals from peers in the public. So.
Kirby, is that why for years practically no one would admit to having been raped?
Well, yes. Is
that changing?
I think it's beginning to change. And I think in part because of the activists that you see on campus, that people are willing to come out and speak about this. But for so many years, I mean, there's so much shame attached to it, which is just obvious. There's no shame attached with any other crime. I mean, if you're robbed, I mean, you go forward, you tell your friends, you tell the police. But there's so much victim blaming around rape and sexual assault that it has been, as Amy said, it's really been covered up.
If you're robbed, nobody asks you, did you leave your wallet out?
Or why were you walking down that alley? Or, you know, and yet the statistics are exactly the same for false reporting of any other crime, of gender violence crimes and any other crimes. And yet those kind of crimes get questioned and these other crimes do not.
Andrea, your story of being assaulted as a sophomore at UNC at Chapel Hill and the activism that you launched in response to it is at the heart of this documentary. Will you give us a brief description of what happened, as much as you are willing to say on the air?
Yeah, I was assaulted my sophomore year, and it was at a party that a friend had invited me to. And, you know, my assailant very much looked a lot like anyone that I shared a classroom with. And I think what for me was just so difficult to process is, you know, I knew about this. I had, you know, met others that had dealt with it, but I never thought it would happen to me. You know, I wasn't drinking. You know, I had friends that night. This guy looked like anybody, you know, that I could trust. And I think, you know, women are just told that, you know, if you do certain things, it's not going to happen, but that's not true. And that's because, you know, these predators, they calculate what they're going to do. They know who they're going after. You know, they see when we're not with our friends and we're not sure what's going on. And I think, you know, for me, what was more difficult than actually processing that this had happened to me, it was finally realizing that I could call it rape and actually asking my school for help. And the first avenue that I took to do that was simply trying to drop a class after just feeling so traumatized and not being able to be a normal student. And the first response I got was that maybe I couldn't handle Carolina and I was just being lazy and couldn't finish my coursework. And, you know, I was a first-generation college student, and it was so hard for me to get into school and to navigate the system. And I never thought that, you know, the first time I were to be sincerely asking for help, that's the answer I would get. And that's why I became an activist. And you know, I never thought that I would get to where I am right now, but I saw pretty early on my campus, and I've seen this at other campuses too, is that it's very hard to come forward with this. And not only ask for help, but ask for help from your entire community and ask them to stand beside you. Because when you accuse your school of not dealing with this well, the entire community rises to defend the institution. You know, the professors that you once trusted, the administrators you once trusted, and, you know, the counselors that were once your friends. Pardon what?
And the counselors as well.
Yes, and the counselors. I mean, I very quickly found out that I didn't have many friends that believed just the gravity of this issue.
No, you've said that although you could hear people outside the bathroom where you were being assaulted, you couldn't scream. Can you remember what you were thinking at the time?
I think, you know, during my assault, I really just wish that I would have more than 20 years to live. You know, I was 20 years old. I felt that I could have died there, and I think that's what many survivors feel as well. You know, I felt that if I fought harder, you know, if I screamed, I probably wouldn't survive that night.
Kirby, people often assume the rapes that we hear about on college campuses happen during dates or at parties when the woman decides she wants to put on the brakes and the man doesn't. But that's not the problem you focus on here. Doesn't your film explain that over 90% of on-campus rapes are perpetrated by a small group of repeat offenders?
No, this is true. You know, less than 8% of the men less than 8% of the men commit the vast majority of crimes, and these men are repeat offenders. They calculate who they're going to target. They target them. They oftentimes get them drunk, then befriend them, take and say, "Well, listen, I'll take you home. I'll take you up to this room. You can sleep it off." And in many cases, when they're totally incapacitated, they assault them. And this is an MO that they repeat again and again.
So they would be called serial rapists if they weren't on campus. Any idea of how many rapes on average one of these men might commit during a typical college career?
Yeah, I mean, the average repeat offender commits 6 sexual assaults during his time in campus.
Amy, during the film, you interviewed a young man who'd been convicted of an on-campus rape, but his image was blurred to hide his identity because he still has to be protected? Didn't he commit a crime?
Well, he did. He did. That was part of the arrangement that we made.
What did he say, Amy, when you asked him how likely it was that someone who'd raped a woman on a college campus would go on to rape someone else?
I think his words in the film were 100%.
So would you think he was admitting to it himself?
Well, he's a convicted rapist, so he was just saying that in his own experiences and knowledge of, you know, how serial predators operate, that, you know, once a predator is embedded in a system that sort of gives them perfect storm conditions to commit these crimes, which is what we show in our film, how campuses operate, then they can continue, and they can, and not only can, but they will commit these crimes repeatedly.
How aware do you think that most college students are that some of the classmates are serial rapists.
Oh, I don't think anyone's aware of it. I mean, I think that's part of what our film is so revelatory in showing and why it's so important to see. And I think that's why we have such this problem so embedded and no one really understands it or knows how to take it on, because people have this misconception that it's just hookups gone bad or, you know, date rape or, you know, it's just sloppy sex or, you know, what are you going to do? Kids drink, so we can't really tell. And no, actually, we can tell. You know, these crimes are premeditated and calculated, as Kirby said. They're perpetrated by serial predators. And people do not sort of make these things up.
We're talking with Amy Ziering, producer, Kirby Dick, who is the writer-director of a film called The Hunting Ground, and also with Andrea Pino, who is one of the people featured in the film. Andrea, officials estimate some 88% of on-campus rapes go unreported. Does that sound right to you?
Absolutely, and I saw this, you know, just in my own experience on campus. I mean, there is much more of a deterrence for coming forward than there actually is for committing this crime.
Why didn't you report it right away?
I didn't really know who he was, and when I went to ask for friends' help and ask them, you know, if they had seen who he was or what he looked like, I was met with a lot of hesitation. A lot of what Amy was just saying, you know, maybe it was a bad hookup, maybe you don't know what happened. And beyond that, I mean, it was that first experience I had with that academic advisor. I mean, when I was just trying to drop a class. I mean, I said, if it was this bad when I tried dropping a class, I can't imagine how awful it is when I actually want to report who this guy is.
So you waited a while, and then you finally decided to report it. What changed your mind?
I think it was just hearing, you know, so many stories from my own dorm and from my own friend groups. And I actually ended up stumbling upon a box that was attached to one of the bathrooms in the student union. And in reading the description, it said, you know, anonymously report sexual assault. And I was like, well, I guess I have an option to report here without having to go through that awful conversation again with an administrator. And in learning more about this box system, you know, I learned that it was a way of me reporting without having to have a conversation unless I wanted to. And I learned that the system was created by a fellow student and survivor named Annie Clark, who I later worked with.
But also, you were having nightmares. You couldn't sleep. You thought you were going to just return to normal life, and then that didn't happen. And, Kirby, those symptoms sound like PTSD. Do you have any sense of how many of these students who were raped on campus would show signs of having had PTSD?
Oh, many, many students, or many, many survivors of rape actually do experience PTSD. But and it's not just the rape that causes the PTSD. It's the response of the institution that actually greatly exacerbates it.
And that seemed to be the case with one of the people in the film, Rachel Hudick.
Yes, Rachel Hudick, who was assaulted at Notre Dame. You know, here is just a really a wonderful young woman, really trusted everyone, was, you know, from a lot of a perspective on this, was she was set up to be assaulted. And it really impacted her life. Even years after, she's still very devastated by this.
And she says that the president of the college told her things like that don't happen here. So that's just a way of this was a woman. The head of a women's college telling her that?
Yes, yes. It's just unfortunate that the responses of administrators historically over the last several decades have been very similar. These college presidents often are more concerned about the reputation of the school than about the safety of their students.
But there was a hearing here, Amy. That wasn't very satisfactory for Rachel.
You know, it's very common, you know, for people to go through these hearings because, again, many times these hearings are set up to protect the school. And also, the schools, they have not put enough money into the investigative and adjudicative process, so they haven't professionalized these systems yet.
Andrea, how did the officials at UNC react when you reported your rape?
I mean, very poorly. I mean, I think the first example was an academic advisor, but even beyond that, it was just when I started asking those hard questions, you know, what do we do about sexual assault here? And, you know, I was very much met with, you know, just stop talking about it. And much like how Rachel developed PTSD in particular after the response, I did as well. I was a resident assistant in addition to, you know, being a survivor and having so many students come forward to me and ask me for help and having to tell them, I don't know what to do, you know, nothing here is really working, was so hard because I was not just living through my own assault and betrayal, but, you know, every one of the assaults and betrayals of all the other students that came to me.
We're talking about a film called The Hunting Ground, which opened today at the Angelica Film Center on West Howson Street. The people I'm discussing it with are Kirby Dick, who wrote and directed it, Amy Ziering, its producer, and Andrea Pino, who is a recent graduate of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, one of the people featured in the film. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Kirby Dick, who wrote and directed a film called The Hunting Ground, Amy Ziering, who's the producer, and Andrea Pino, who is one of the people featured in it. Perhaps the most, you probably get the most screen time, Andrea. I don't know if that's good. I'm sure you would have preferred some not having to have been put in that position.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started working on this project, it was back before, you know, we were even taken seriously by our schools and by the national media. So we never could have predicted what our role would have been in the film as the film grew as a project.
Now, you mentioned that you it started when you connect with Annie E. Clark, another woman who had been raped on the UNC campus, whose complaints had been ignored. So you joined forces to support other women who'd been raped? When did it start expanding beyond UNC?
Yeah, so one of our first connections when we were first kind of, you know, discussing what we were going to do was in October 2012 when we connected with students at Amherst and students at Yale that had also kind of taken on their school and tried to bring some change there. But a lot of the bigger change came after we filed a federal complaint under Title IX against the University of North Carolina in January 2013. And we began getting calls and emails and Facebook messages, you know, from students across the country, anywhere from Berkeley to Dartmouth College.
Now, what got you thinking that this might be something that would warrant a Title IX complaint?
Well, honestly, it was, you know, I say that I'm not any different from so many of the students that are in classrooms right now and that were with me when I was in school. You know, it was actually just reading the material that I was assigned for my political science courses, and it was learning about Title IX and the fact that it's a gender equity law, that it's not about sports, that it's really about access to education, and that it's one of the few platforms that is comprehensive enough, you know, to give us a platform to actually solicit our school and the federal government for help. So it was actually, you know, you don't need an attorney. You could be 20 years old and take on a 200-year university with this law.
So the school was actually arming you against it by teaching you this.
Without knowing, so.
Amy, in the film you've focused on six schools, Harvard, Yale, Notre Dame, the University of California at Berkeley, Occidental, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Why those six?
Well, actually, we don't just focus on those schools. I think the film names over 30 schools and has survivors from dozens. And our point wasn't to sort of focus particularly on those schools per se, but to show that this is a widespread national systemic problem. What was so uncanny and strange for Kirby and I was that every place we went, we heard the same stories over and over again.
How important to these stories are the fraternity and sorority cultures at the various schools?
I'll let Kirby speak to the statistics on that. But what our film does point out is there's something very unique about campus life, right? And that's why it's important to see this film, is because there's something different there, and there's a way in which this kind of environment can give host to these kind of crimes in a very particular way. And within that, to answer your question, there's obviously, you know, campus life hosts sorority culture, and it also hosts sports culture. So our film also shows the ways in which those two particular cultures as well, which thrive in these environments, have their own unique characteristics, which also aid and abet the crimes of serial predators and give them cover.
But I think it's important to point out that, you know, most athletes and most men in fraternities are not rapists. They are horrified by this. Again, it's a small percentage of repeat offenders in both those communities. So it's, but it is true that in both those environments, it is a real problem.
Well, Andrea, aren't girls warned not to go to parties at some of the fraternities? Some are considered dangerous, others are not?
I would say it really is a majority of fraternity men that assault. It's not all fraternities as a whole, but I mean, it's something that we
a minority of fraternity men, right? Yeah. You said majority, Andrea, right?
I said minority.
Sorry.
It's a minority of fraternity men that assault, just like that's a minority of men that assault, period. But I think what we're seeing, you know, in college campuses is that, you know, there is this talk of the town, you know, don't go to SAE, don't go to DKE, don't go to Beta. You know, it's different fraternities at different schools, but it's very much like, you know, that's the fraternity where you're more likely to get assaulted. And I felt that I learned that before I even learned what my rights were under Title IX. I mean, it was something that is very much, you know, told to every single woman in particular on campus. Don't go there. It might happen.
Kirby, in the film, you highlight the laughable punishments colleges have been handing out to students who've raped or sexually assaulted other students. Can you tell us about some of the punishments?
I think there was a suspension for one day. I think someone was assigned a book report. Someone was assigned to make a poster listing 10 ways to approach a woman you like. And I think the last one we list is that someone was given 50 hours of community service. This is somebody who was found responsible for sexual assault, was given 50 hours of community service at a rape crisis center.
Some were expelled after they graduated.
Yes, some were expelled.
A couple of football players after they played their last game.
Yes,
yeah. Yes.
Expulsion on graduation.
Now, you, Amy, and Kirby have worked together on two previous documentaries, including The Invisible War, which was about rape in the U.S. military. It was nominated for an Oscar in 2013. Did the idea for making this documentary grow out of those earlier films?
Yeah, it actually came directly out of that. We were actually, when we finished Invisible War, Kirby and I immediately jumped on another project. But in the course of going around to campuses showing Invisible War, time and again, someone would come up to us at those screenings and say, you know, this happened to me here, and a lot of what you're pointing out that happened in our military actually took place to me on this campus. And we kept sort of just trading these stories, and then we got letters in our inbox, you know, dear filmmakers, will you please make a film about what's going on our campuses, from students around the country. So we were surprised to learn of this ourselves. You know, I'm a parent. I really had no idea, you know, the nature and extent of this problem on our campuses. And so we started doing investigative work and found out not only were people telling us true, but it was even far worse. And so we immediately pivoted and decided we were going to jump in and make this film.
Andrea, you said that you and Annie Clark created an organization to advise women who've been raped at colleges throughout the country to support them and their parents. How important is the role of the parents? Many of the women in the film, if I remember correctly, said that they didn't tell the parents that they had been raped because they knew how much it would hurt them.
Yeah, so our organization is called End Rape on Campus, and a very good chunk of the people who actually contact our organization are parents. But I would say, you know, not every parent knows how to respond. I mean, I was dreading the day that I would tell my parents. I mean, simply because I didn't want them to have to think that their daughter, you know, went off to her dream school and was assaulted there. And I think, you know, many survivors share that same concern. But I think what I've seen, too, is, you know, we've seen a lot of parents, you know, in particular in the film, that have been so headstrong at supporting their student. And I think it's also just so important for us, you know, as Americans in general, to really hold the schools accountable and not just leave it up to our students. Because all we want to do is graduate. All we want to do is get our degree. And, you know, it really is up to parents and alumni to ask those hard questions when they go on campus tours.
Although some of the students are afraid to tell their parents because they're afraid they're going to be blamed.
I mean, I think it's very much a cultural thing as well. I mean, we blame the victim, and this comes both, unfortunately, from families, and it comes from friends. I mean, I had a lot of friends, family friends, that didn't know what to tell me, that were wondering if I was sure that it happened. I mean, they just couldn't believe that that could have happened to someone like me. And, you know, my parents have been very supportive, but they also often don't know what to say. You know, and I only told them after I decided to come public to the newspaper. That's really why I even told them. So I think, you know, parents really need to support their students. They really need to support survivors. And, you know, sometimes it seems so easy, but it's really the most important thing you can say to a survivor, that you believe them.
In the film, you include a string of young women reciting questions that they were asked by school officials. Amy, what were you wearing? Did you say no? How did you say no? Were you drinking?
Did you fight back? Why didn't you fight back? Are you sure, you know, you're remembering correctly? Are you sure he doesn't just like you a lot? You know, did you lead him on? Yeah, endless.
What kind of an impact do you think that has on the person who's being asked those kinds of questions?
Oh, it's
are you at fault?
Exactly. It's devastating, you know, and we saw that firsthand, and I was really surprised because I myself was hearing these stories from these people, and I was sitting in the identical position that these administrators would be sitting in, and I don't understand how someone could respond that way.
Aren't victims often also warned by school officials not to go to the police, but to let the school handle it itself?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, we heard this on multiple occasions.
Is that the best approach?
Well, it really should be up to the survivor whether they want to go to the police, but the school should do everything they can to assist the survivor in going to police if the survivor wants to. But obviously what the school wants to do, if the survivor goes to the police, it becomes a matter of public record. And this is the last thing many institutions want. They don't want any records of sexual assault happening at their campus.
And you also include a former campus policeman who got frustrated at the way he was treated when he tried to help these girls. And we say girls, yeah, but there are some cases of male-on-male rape as well.
Yes, there are male survivors as well, and we do have them in our film. But, that was really amazing, that interview we did with Pat Cottrell.
Now, I just read that Jameis Winston has reassured all of the NFL teams that he's matured in the years since he was caught stealing crab's legs, which is the only crime I think he ever has really been convicted of. But you, your interviews include the parents, and a rape victim, Erica Kinsman. She accused Jameis Winston, who was the quarterback of the school's of Florida State's national championship football team, of raping her in his apartment. And what happened there?
Well, you know, she, you know, immediately reported it, and just expected, and was very willing to go to the police. So the Tallahassee police started investigating. Unfortunately, they completely botched the investigation.
What did they do with the rape kit?
Well, the rape kit, they waited, I think, nearly a year before they actually tested it.
And what's so great about the film is that this is the first time you get to hear Erica tell her side of the story. You know, no one in public has heard that for years. You've heard FSU be able to publicize what happened. So that's what's really incredible. It's very compelling.
Well, do you think it was a special situation because Jameis Winston may be the most talented college quarterback?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
who's going to be in the draft this year?
Well, it was obviously he was. You know, they knew he was going to be a very talented quarterback, and then as the year went on, you know, they were on the way to the national championship. So, you know, this is very important for the reputation of that school, for the school boosters. So, this is something you see in major sports schools around the country, that star athletes are often protected when they're accused of sexual assault.
Well, he was accused of a second rape, but that didn't seem to matter either. Andrea, afterward, Erica faced a huge backlash from other students, including lots of hate mail and threats from women as well as from men. Did you face something similar at UNC after you went public about you're being raped?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's definitely different because, you know, in Erica's case, Jameis Winston is adored not just by FSU's community but by the nation. So that's definitely an added challenge. But, I mean, just for me on campus, you know, I had a lot of student groups that stopped associating with me, a lot of friends and no longer, you know, wanted me to be around them. I had a lot of administrators who just conveniently stopped ignoring my emails and I was no longer invited to meetings. And I think for me the worst came when I had social media threats, you know, a lot of people tweeting awful things at me, death threats, rape threats. And on one occasion, my residence hall was broken into Easter Sunday. And, you know, my whole hall was vandalized, and there were fingerprints left behind on the doorknobs and a knife that was spray painted over. And, you know, I was like, this is real. And I felt very unsafe, and I actually ended up, you know, dropping out for a semester right after that because I felt so unsafe.
What did the police do if there were fingerprints left behind? Couldn't they have found the people who did this?
Yeah, I was actually just looking over the police report a few years ago, and no fingerprints were taken, no photos were taken. The only photos that were taken were the ones I took to provide to the investigators, and there was no follow-up at all after that. I mean, I felt that, you know, I had exhausted every option on campus.
And as a rape victim, Andrea, was threatened with rape. Is that something that you've heard from some of the other women?
Absolutely. So many women I know, in particular the ones that come forward, and in particular if, you know, they're at a school that's already under investigation, or if their perpetrator is a person that's adored by the campus, I mean, that's very common. Most of my friends have come forward at some point, you know, but in particular the ones in the film that have come forward multiple times, they get this on a daily basis. I mean, especially if you write something online, if you write for a story, if you're in some type of news outlet, you're going to get those threats.
Now, in checking around the various universities, did you find any that you felt, Kirby, that handled it better than others?
There are a few. I mean, it's a problem at all universities, but some universities are doing some things right. Yale, for example, has regular surveys of its Yale is very transparent in the reports of sexual assaults and how those assaults have been adjudicated, and they put out that information twice a year. The University of Michigan has put a lot of money in and has very good survivor services. So if somebody comes to report, they do take good care of them. But there's so much more that they have to do.
At Columbia, we have somebody who's walking around with a mattress on her back as a way of telling people about how Columbia handled her rape situation.
No, I mean, Emma Sokolowitz is a, you know, her activism of all the students at Columbia is really remarkable. And again, I think we should keep in mind that the reason we're talking about this today is because of what students have done over the last year.
Andrea, how did you meet these filmmakers?
Yeah, so they actually came for a screening of The Invisible War, back when their film was touring on campuses. And one of my friends, who was a resident in my hall, went to the screening and told them about what was happening at UNC. And they said, you have to meet my RA and what she's dealing with right now. And again, this was very much, you know, before we won the New York Times, before we were on any of these media outlets. And, you know, they called us the next day and said, you know, we're interested in working on this project. It's still in the idea phase. But we want to talk more about what you're doing and how this project could help your cause.
And you have founded an organization with Annie Clark called End Rape on Campus?
Yes, we have.
What is your goal there? Obviously, ending rape on campus is an ideal, but it's unlikely to end.
Yeah, and what we want to do with End Rape on Campus and what we have done is we want to make kind of justice as accessible as possible. And we learned this very early on in our own kind of journey to hold UNC accountable, that you didn't need to be an attorney, that you could be, you know, in your 20s and really bring some type of change to your campus. What we do is we actually provide pro bono services to students that are seeking to file federal complaints, as well as mentorship opportunities to help these students organize on campus, talk to the media for the first time, and really create real change on their campuses.
Amy, in going around to different schools and speaking to the administrators, some who were sympathetic, what was your general sense that they are going to continue to try to protect their institution and really not reveal what has gone on in the past?
Well, what we found in making the film over the course of 2 years, we were really shocked that most administrators were very reluctant to speak with us on camera. We had some very candid and interesting conversations off camera, but when it came to actually, you know, going on the record and talking about really what they saw going on at the universities, the fear was really remarkably surprising to both of us. I mean, it was extremely hard, and as you see in the film, you know, there's very few people in high, you know, in high official positions at universities that actually end up talking to us on camera, even though we made multiple solicitations over the overtures for, we made overtures for 2 years.
And you had some faculty members on camera who revealed that because they supported the rape victims, they wound up facing real problems.
Yeah, no, we were, faculty in some ways were even more afraid to speak, even oddly enough, than in administrators. You know, you think of universities and colleges sort of free speech zone, that if there was an issue, that faculty could speak out about it. But it seems like there is so much concern about the reputation that these faculty members, the pressure that these faculty members feel from administrators, that they know what the problem is, but they're afraid to speak out.
Andrea, are you still at school?
I am, actually.
What are you majoring in?
What?
What are you majoring in? Activism?
I feel like every day I'm learning from fellow activists and everyone that I get to work with. I mean, I am actually still working towards my degree in political science. I'm not on campus. I'm only missing 3 classes. I ended up walking because of how unsafe I felt on campus. So I'm hoping to be done soon and later pursue a law degree.
Andrea Pino is an activist and co-founder of End Rape on Campus, which supports on-campus rape survivors and their families. Amy Zering is the producer of a film called Hunting Ground, the one we've been discussing. She's a 2-time Emmy Award winner and the recipient of awards for investigative journalism and courage in filmmaking. And Kirby Dick is the film's writer and director. He's won 2 Emmy Awards, a Peabody. He's also been nominated for an Academy Award. Their film opens today at the
Angelica
on West Houston Street. I'm sorry, suddenly had momentary dead brain there. And I thank you all so much for coming on our show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.